It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We turn to suicide prevention. As newly published CDC data, it shows suicide rates rose in 2021 for the first time in 2 years. Call in with questions and how to talk about suicide given the perpetuating stigmas. 800-642-1234. Conversation right here to talk. 800-642-1234. Sarah Kolbeck is an assistant professor in the psychiatry department at the Medical College of Wisconsin, where she directs the Wisconsin Comprehensive Injury Center's Division of Suicide Prevention, and she's co-host of the S Word podcast. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Why are you seeing suicide rates increasing, especially in Wisconsin's rural areas?
Yeah, that's a great question. And as you mentioned, the CDC just published numbers from 2021. And unfortunately, we saw an increase in suicide after seeing a decrease in 2020. And in recent years, there has been more attention placed on suicide in rural communities. And, you know, I think that there are a number of reasons behind this. My work and my research focuses on suicide in the farming community and among Wisconsin farmers. And I have seen a number of different factors that have contributed to suicide in this group, including things like, financial stressors. And some of those financial stressors are certainly related to crop loss and other issues that are the result of extreme weather events that we've seen in recent years in our region and then in other parts of the, obviously other parts of the globe as well. Things like isolation. We know that folks that are in rural communities are often isolated and don't necessarily have as many opportunities for social connection as folks that live in larger cities. And so sometimes that isolation can be a contributing factor to suicide in rural communities.
I wonder, how do you do this sensitive research in rural communities where people you want them to be honest and open up with you about mm-hmm. mental health? How do you go about that?
Yeah, I mean, suicide is still a topic that's quite stigmatized in many, in many communities, not just in rural communities, but, you know, in other communities and among other groups as well. And so a lot of it has to do with really establishing relationships with folks. As a researcher, it's really important to me to, you know, gain the trust of folks that I am working with. And so that means, you know, going to, you know, farming communities around Wisconsin, sitting across the table and talking to folks, going out to their farms and learning about the work that they do. And then really, you know, again, establishing that trust. And that sometimes is, a pathway to opening up to having these difficult conversations. I have also found that I think in recent years, there has been a little bit more willingness to be open about these conversations around mental health. And so, you know, even among, folks that are a little bit older, not necessarily younger folks only, you know, I think there's a recognition that, you know, mental health is something that affects all of us. We all have mental health. Some days it's great mental health and some days it's poor mental health. And so I think, like I said, there's a gaining appreciation for the need to have these conversations, which has certainly helped in the realm of research.
Your team observed farmers who felt their sense of independence could be at risk from physical health issues due to aging. How might mm-hmm. aging affect suicide risk?
Yeah, here in Wisconsin, some of the highest rates of suicide that we have are among folks ages 75 and older. And we see a number of factors contributing to that. Certainly physical health issues that either that are a result of, you know, maybe an acute injury that happened on the farm or elsewhere, or physical health issues that are related to a chronic health concern like cancer or a condition that causes chronic pain really affects a person's ability to be able to kind of perform and be how they used to be physically. And in many ways that, brings with it a sense of loss of identity in many ways, particularly for farmers whose you know, lifestyle is so physically demanding. You know, not being able to do that work, you know, after many, many years of doing so, is not just physically difficult, but also mentally and emotionally difficult. And unfortunately, in many farmers who have died by suicide in our state, we see physical health issues as a contributing factor. Just really feeling like, again, there's a sense of not being able to contribute, not being able to take care of oneself that really damages one's self-identity.
Sarah Kolbeck is with us, heads up the Division of Suicide Prevention at the Medical College of Wisconsin's Comprehensive Injury Center. Colin, with your questions about suicide prevention, share your experiences being a lifeline or helping others in crisis. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss how to combat suicide and improve access to crisis care for people in rural communities and in marginalized groups. Call in with your questions, your stories, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah Kolbeck is here from the Medical College of Wisconsin's Comprehensive Injury Center, where she directs its Division of Suicide Prevention. Sarah, your research examines farm culture to understand rural suicide. What do experts need to understand to better care for farmers at risk or self-harm?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things that I have heard as I talk to farmers as part of my research is that sometimes when they go in to seek help from whether it's a mental health provider or, you know, maybe just a primary care doctor, they feel as though kind of their culture and the day-to-day, you know, work and stressors that they experience maybe aren't very well understood. And so there's a hesitancy maybe to, you know, reach out for that help and that support because there's a fear of not being understood. And I think when you have that sense that you're not understood by somebody, especially somebody that, you know, you're seeking care from, that can further, you know, lead to feelings maybe of isolation or even increase a sense of stigma around the issue. So one of the things that I think is really important for particularly those in the healthcare community, but also other folks that engage with farmers on a regular basis is to try and understand the culture of farming, try to understand the language that farmers use, you know, so that when you're encountering folks from the farming community that maybe are having mental health struggles or other struggles, that you're able to really connect with them on a level that makes them feel understood. And hopefully that will, you know, increase their willingness to seek out services if needed.
More than 70% of Wisconsin farmers who die by suicide use a firearm. What can be done to minimize the chance of a firearm being used for self-harm?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, one of the things that I heard through my research pretty, you know, resoundingly is that firearms are sometimes a tool of the trade in farming. And so it's not about, you know, limiting or decreasing access. It's really about safe storage and making sure that, you know, when a firearm is not in use or when it doesn't need to be used, that it's safe, that it's stored safely. And so when somebody is in a situation where they're having a suicide or a mental health crisis, that firearm is not, you know, easily accessible to them in those times of distress. We have found through research and suicide that a decision to take one's life can be made very quickly, you know, within, you know, 15 to 20 seconds sometimes. And so if you're able to put time and distance between a person and their chosen means of ending their life, there's a very, very high probability that they will not die by suicide. There's a little bit of a myth out there that, you know, if somebody doesn't have access to one, you know, manner or means, that they're going to substitute with another. And research really shows us that that is not true. In most cases, if, again, there's time and distance put between a person and their means for taking their life, that a suicide will not occur.
What about the research that says that, you know, depression and substance use disorders may come before suicide or maybe a marker? Mm-hmm. Do you feel that that is true, or should we be careful to make such connections or generalizations?
Yeah, that I love that question, because many of us suffer with or live with and experience depression. Many people, you know, deal with issues related to substance use. And so we have to think about suicide as something that's more complex than just one factor. It's not just because of depression. It's not just because of substance use. You know, there are other things that are going on in the life of a person that contribute to suicide. I will say that, you know, marked, you know, sudden depression or very sudden changes in substance use patterns can sometimes be a warning sign for suicide. And so it's really about kind of looking for those changes in behavior that are very, very out of the norm, something unexpected, something sudden that seems out of character for the person. And that might look like depression. It might look like increased use of substances, including alcohol. And so, you know, that's why it's important to be able to, you know and understand people and have conversations with folks so you know what they're going through.
Sarah Kolbeck leads the Division of Suicide Prevention at the Medical College of Wisconsin's Comprehensive Injury Center. Colin, with your questions about suicide prevention, share your concerns as a parent or for your loved one's mental health. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Tony Evers has called mental health a quiet, burgeoning crisis in our state. We learn about suicide prevention strategies and how to help a loved one. Be part of this conversation by calling with your questions, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. And make note, call or text 988 to reach the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline anytime, 24/7. We have Sarah Kolbeck, who is with us, assistant professor in the psychiatry department at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Sarah, you know, while suicide rates are higher in rural areas than urban areas of Wisconsin, the rate is rising statewide, which is echoing a nationwide trend. What is causing the suicide rates to rise again?
Yeah, good question. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, suicide is a complex issue. So it's not really possible to point to one single specific factor. I will say that particularly with youth and young people, I think the impact of not just the COVID-19 pandemic, but kind of the ongoing trauma that we see related to other social issues in our country is really having an impact on youth and young people in particular. I think, you know, the pandemic was certainly traumatic and difficult for all of us, but particularly for younger people who, you know, are obviously in a very important transitional time in their lives. And so I think the stress that we were under collectively has certainly impacted, you know, not just issues related to mental health, but suicide as well. You know, and as I said, it's not just one thing. You know, I think that there are a number of factors, but a lot of it is related to, you know, a sense of isolation, feeling isolated, and maybe not having access to the services that we need to have access to in a timely manner.
Joe from Waukesha wrote in to say that they suffer from borderline personality disorder, and that comes with high suicidal ideation. Joe said they think about it nearly every day at times. People are in pain, and suicide offers a window out of that pain. Joe writes that if the individual is not able to process their deep grief and their sadness and their anger, that we live in a society that does not encourage the feeling of feelings, much less talking about mm-hmm. them with others. And they end their message saying, "I hope this helps." What can you say there?
Yeah, and I think Joe raises, a really important consideration that, for many people, having thoughts of suicide is, kind of a chronic lifelong thing. It's not, you have a thought or a feeling and it's gone forever, that this is part of the lives of many people. I'll also say that, having thoughts of suicide really isn't that uncommon of a phenomenon. Many of us at one point in our life might have a thought. And I think the more that we can kind of normalize those thoughts, the more that we can bring it out into the open to maybe, start to have these conversations in a way that, is safe and supportive. And so I think, I appreciate Joe sharing his experience with our listeners today. And just want to, acknowledge, what he is saying, that it is difficult to, talk about your feelings, to feel your feelings. And I think the more we have these conversations, hopefully the easier that will become.
If you are worried about a friend or a family member, what are the right words and gestures to inquire how they're doing, how they're really doing and feeling, and how do you show that you really care and that you want to give support?
Yeah, so I will say that when you are confronted with a situation where a person that you care for is maybe thinking about suicide or you're concerned about them, it can be very scary, especially if they tell you that they are thinking about suicide. The best thing to do is kind of just take a breath, yourself and kind of calm your own nervous system. And then approach the situation with a sense of curiosity, asking open-ended questions. It is important to ask a person that you're concerned about, are you thinking about killing yourself? And then if they say yes, providing them a space and an opportunity to talk those feelings through. What does that feel like? What does that mean to you? What is making you feel this way? Tell me more about how you're feeling. And sometimes, just the act of having that conversation kind of with arms open and, listening carefully in a non-judgmental way can be enough to de-escalate a situation. Certainly if somebody is, really in a very acute crisis or there's a suicide attempt in progress, the best thing to do is take them to the emergency department or call 911 for, for immediate help. But if, they're thinking about it and, maybe, aren't quite sure, maybe have some vague thoughts, really the best thing to do is just have that open conversation. Like I said, ask those open-ended questions and then try not to give advice. Advice in this scenario isn't necessarily going to be helpful. And so really just providing that safe space for people to talk and share their feelings.
We have Sarah Kolbeck with us, Director of the Division of Suicide Prevention at the Medical College of Wisconsin's Comprehensive Injury Center. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Sarah, what has been the impact of the 988 call or text line, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline? Early on, there were some issues with it. Are people getting connected to help quickly?
Yeah, from what I have heard, I know that the folks that are working at the Wisconsin Suicide and Crisis Lifeline are working really hard to ramp up staffing and training within their call center to be able to assist and help callers as they come in. I think with the visibility of 988 and the easy three-digit dialing number, it was to be expected that there would be an increase in calls just because, again, there's that awareness of this resource that's out there. But I do know that at the state level, there is a lot of work and a lot of effort going into really ramping up, as I said, that service and, making it available to folks that are calling in. So there's, there's nothing more difficult when you're in a mental health crisis and you need help than to have to wait. And I definitely want to acknowledge that. I mean, that is really a difficult thing. And so it's incredibly important that people have immediate access to this resource. And I know the state is working very hard on that.
You mentioned at the state level, being the year of mental health, Governor Evers calling it the year of mental health, and seeking an additional $500 million to be allocated for mental health and behavioral resources. What programs should Wisconsin invest in to reduce suicide?
That's a great question. You know, I think education programs are really important. You know, educating, you know, not just clinical providers, but folks, you know, out in the community about, you know, signs of suicide, and also, you know, how to respond if somebody is in a crisis, or how to support a friend or a loved one or a colleague. I also think that it's really important to bolster programming that focuses on social determinants of health, things like, you know, economic issues or access to healthcare services, housing issues, all of these, you know, kind of community level, societal level issues affect suicide. People often think about it as a mental health issue, but it's really a public health issue. You know, it involves, you know, suicide prevention involves things like access to affordable housing, access to, you know, healthy, affordable food and green space, you know, and so building programs that benefit the community as a whole are going to have an impact on suicide, because they are going to make folks, you know, feel healthier from a mental health perspective. And so not just, you know, the focus on, you know, clinical services, which are obviously important, but also bolstering social services in the community that will support folks.
I wonder specifically youth, because those are numbers as well increasing. And in the governor's budget, he's seeking comprehensive school mental health services. What effect would that have on youth mental health?
Yes, there are some really, really wonderful school-based suicide prevention programs out there. Here in Milwaukee, where I live, there are a number of schools that have what's called Hope Squads, which is a peer-based suicide prevention program, and really equipping youth and young people with the skills to be able to not only approach their peers that if they're concerned about, a potential risk for suicide, but also really improving school climate and promoting an environment of help seeking at the school level is incredibly important. And so, you know, I think school programs like Sources of Strength and Hope Squads and other programs like that really ought to be implemented at the district level across the state, because I think those programs will definitely help.
I want to land on your podcast, the S word, of course, referring to suicide, and this podcast where you've brought in so many experts to discuss. But as we started the conversation about stigma and these invisible barriers, do you see that starting to change? What have you learned as your podcast has evolved?
I think it is starting to change. I think there is that willingness to open up a little bit. And really one of the goals of the podcast is to help break that stigma, you know, to really normalize these conversations. Those of us that are on the podcast are very open about our own stories and our own journeys with mental health and even thoughts of suicide. And so, you know, it's really intended to continue to break down those barriers that are, I think, starting to come down a little bit. And so our hope is really that we make, you know, the latest research and evidence-based, you know, information available to folks out in the community, maybe that are, you know, doing this work on the ground, making that information accessible so that, you know, these different ideas can be implemented in the community.
Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sarah Kolbeck is Director of the Division of Suicide Prevention at the Medical College of Wisconsin's Comprehensive Injury Center, co-host of the S Word podcast. And for disclosure, Medical College of Wisconsin is a business sponsor of WPR. If you or a loved one is having thoughts of suicide, call or text 988 to reach the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Again, three digits, 988. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.